Is you gotta make sure you write off stuff for,
I know,
from this year, because this was a full year of expired tax write-offs.
Of last year?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I need to buy something.
No, but like gas.
Yeah.
The fee for bus route.
Mm-hmm.
Stuff like that. Anything that, any app or anything you maybe had to download or like software. All that stuff.
Yeah.
Business expense.
And then you don't have to pay taxes, right?
It takes it off of what you made. So say you made $10 mm-hmm. and you spent $3 to make that $10,
mm-hmm.
you only made $7. Oh. So you would pay taxes on $7 instead of $10. Does that make, yeah. you know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Makes sense.
That's why I can't like Taylor threw those receipts away. That's why he is not in charge of.
They're in a file folder labeled expenses.
In there. Okay. Well, what do you have going on this week?
It's Wednesday. Working, and then this weekend I'm volunteering for Dancing with the Stars North Georgia.
The one you did?
Yeah, last year. And it all benefits primary health care, which gets health care into lower income communities in North Georgia.
Yes.
And actually the man who was my work-based learning teacher, like who got you an internship or went with you to job mm-hmm. interviews, or he is competing.
Oh, awesome.
And his name is Bo Campbell. He's the best. And that's awesome. We think he's going to take the win. Yeah.
Sweet.
Yeah. He's the football coach at Notre Dame.
I love that. Mm-hmm. Those things are so much fun.
They're so much fun.
I'm taking the kids to volunteer at the animal shelter this week.
That's going to be...
I'm so excited. You should come.
I want to... It's on Friday?
Mm-hmm.
What time on Friday? I work 4. All day. 4?
Mm-hmm.
Probably swing that.
Mm-hmm.
And it's McCamey?
Mm-hmm. Yep, 4 to 5:30.
Is McCamey near the North Shore?
It's on DuPont Parkway.
It would be an easy drive. I mm-hmm. could probably get there. Okay.
Yeah, I'll text you.
I might, for real. That's going to be so fun.
I can't wait. I want to put GoPros on them.
For sure.
Because they're doing enrichment, which was like prepping their meals and snacks and putting peanut butter on Frisbees and stuff. And mm-hmm. then... bathing them, and they get to have like playtime with them too. But I just know that like when they're putting peanut butter on Frisbees, like Maverick, Jade's gonna ask for her own spoon. Maverick is going to just lick the Frisbee. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, Maverick, he's just gonna be like, who needs a spoon?
And I just see everyone just covered in peanut butter.
100%. And my kid's asking for Kong toys for their birthday.
Yeah.
For themselves.
That's too funny.
I'm excited though. And then it's the first weekend. Bentley is already playing school ball, but Jade and Mav have their first ball tournament, so that's exciting too.
Is it local?
Mm-hmm. Oh, Jade's is a Rossville Park, and Maverick's is at Harrison.
I want to come to Jade's for sure.
You should. It's fun.
Okay. Send me all that info. Text me the dates. This one is a crazy one. I did not think it was going to be 6 pages.
Yeah, when we were printing it, was like, fume. I was like,
I wanted to cover everything because there wasn't a lot of like links online. Mm-hmm. Or a lot of people that I could talk to about this.
Yeah, but there's a lot of, strangely, there's like a lot of backstory.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like the media did a good job of like digging.
For sure.
Which is, I hate to say it because it is obviously a terrible thing happened. But considering where they're from, it's probably like, the most exciting thing a journalist got to mm-hmm. do, like, probably in their whole lives.
Yeah. And shout out to the, is it called a stenographer, the person who types out the court cases while it's happening?
I believe so. They have the gnarliest job.
For real. But it would be so interesting.
Yeah.
So interesting.
Yeah. Okay. Well, here we go. So, this case, the victims are the Goodmans. Stanley Eric Goodman was born on July 6, 1963, to Willard and Essie Goodman in Scott County, Tennessee. He had two brothers, Donald and Larry, and a sister, Paula. He grew up in Huntsville, Tennessee, not to be confused with Huntsville, Alabama.
Yep.
I did not know Huntsville, Tennessee existed.
Me neither.
I did know where Scott County was, but I did not know there was a Huntsville, Tennessee.
Yeah.
It's northwest of Knoxville. He was married at a young age to Sherry Goodman and was a father of three, a daughter, E.G., from a previous relationship. Stanley and Sherry shared a daughter, BG. We are referring to, they were minors at the time, referring to the minors at the time in initials.
Mm-hmm.
But they shared a daughter, BG, and a son. When Stanley and Sherry split, Sherry moved from Huntsville, Tennessee to Cleveland, Tennessee, which is like literally 5 minutes away from my house.
Yeah.
And the two children spent their time stayed with their mom during the school year, and then probably like holiday breaks, like spring break, summer break, whatever, they would go to their dad Stanley's in Huntsville, Tennessee. So, mm-hmm. Shout out to parents though that do separate and are willing and make it happen so their kids can spend time with both parents, even though it's not ideal. Good on them.
It's like a 2-hour drive, you know, anytime you want to see your other parent.
Yeah.
And then Terry Sue, I want to mention this because I feel like she's a badass.
Yeah.
She was in a car accident mm-hmm. in her 20s, and she literally spent months in the hospital recovering, had to learn to walk and talk again. She was never able to work, but she could walk, you know, on mm-hmm. regular terrain. And then 10 years later, something awful happens to her.
Yeah.
Something like this happens
to her. So, go through hell, come back, only for someone to
mm-hmm.
be an asshole.
Yeah.
Or worse than an asshole, to be honest.
Right. So, by the late 90s, Stanley was married to Terry Sue, and they lived in Huntsville. Sherry had remarried to a man named Hubert Glenn Sexton. He was the father of one daughter, and they were living in Cleveland, Tennessee. The Goodman home and the Sexton home were blending pretty nicely at the beginning
mm-hmm.
Because, you know, Stanley had an older daughter and then the two younger kids with mm-hmm. Sherry. Hubert had a daughter, so it was like, you know, more friends, more siblings to hang out with. Then in February of 2000, DCS was called to the Black Fox Elementary School in Cleveland, where 8-year-old E.G. had confided in her teacher about sexual abuse she was receiving at the hands of her stepfather, Hubert.
This is B.G., right?
B.G., yes.
E.G.?
E.G.'s the older one. E.G. is 8.
The middle one.
Yes.
Okay.
Then Hope Tharp, the Child Protective Services team leader in Cleveland, responded to the school. Then they confronted the stepfather, and pretty much he said that he would never do that, obviously denying everything.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, he just
denied it all. Tharp was the investigator, yeah?
Yeah, for DCS.
It says, as a result of the reports and the investigation, the decision was made to remove BG and the two other children from the Sexton home.
Yeah. I think that was eventually. Like,
yeah,
definitely. Not in February, but by May, that was going to happen.
Whew. Mm-hmm. He instructed members of BG's family to come. She instructed them to come to her office that day. For Hubert and his daughter, his other daughter, did not come.
Nope.
Wow.
But her mom showed up.
Mm.
Yeah. She eventually went to their house, and that's when she met Hubert for the first time. And she informed him that why she was there.
Mm-hmm.
And when confronted with BG's allegations of sexual abuse, including forcible sex, he denied all of it, said that, he got all the information, or BG got all the information from her dad, because that's normal.
Yeah. Wow.
And he was only doing that so he could get full custody. Stanley was only doing that so he could get full custody of the kids.
Well, on May 16th of 2000, the Bradley County Sheriff's Detective, Bradley County, Cleveland is in Bradley County. So, the Sheriff's Detective Tony Alvarez had responded to a complaint initiated by a teacher at the Black Fox Elementary School. Along with DCS, Detective Alvarez spoke with BG regarding the allegation. He later spoke with Hubert regarding the allegation and advised him of his Miranda rights. Hubert Sexton waived those rights and signed a written waiver to that effect. So he basically signed saying, I'll tell you whatever. I'll answer your questions. I don't care if I'm the most innocent human on the planet. I'm getting an attorney. Mm-hmm. What?
Yeah, there's only, what is the saying? There's only two things that you need to say to a cop. Hello, officer. And
I want an attorney. I want an attorney. Yeah, that's it. Crap, I lost my spot. Okay, so he waived the rights, signed a written waiver. He informed Detective Alvarez that BG's biological father, Stanley Goodman, was behind the allegations. He even advised Detective Alvarez that he and his wife had been staying with the Goodmans. For one reason or another, they decided to transfer back to Bradley County. Mr. Goodman was not too happy about that arrangement, them staying with them. And that he was basically just getting the kids to, come up with a bunch of crap and false allegations of improper sexual conduct because he was over the living situations. Sure.
Yeah.
Because that's what people do.
Yeah.
I know some crazy people, though.
I know some lunatics.
Yes. Yes.
Living among us.
Unfortunately.
Yeah. Later that week, Stanley Goodman contacted the detective in charge, and at some point after that conversation, he then met again with Hubert Sexton. And during the meeting, the detective informed Hubert of his conversation with Stanley Goodman, including that Stanley Goodman's intent to file a petition to take custody of the children. So he dropped that bomb on him.
Mm-hmm.
Then the detective also asked him to take a polygraph test, but Hubert refused the test, saying that they could be fixed. Okay. Now, a little backstory into Hubert. At the time, he and his friend Preston Adams, they rode back and forth to work together. 8 to 10 weeks, he was in construction. And, like two friends do, they talk about things in their lives, and they would talk about the pending child abuse charges, and that the charges were initiated by Stanley and his ex-wife, or his wife's ex-husband. Hubert asked Preston where he could buy a handgun, and he said, quote, he was going to take care of the matter before it escalated any further. So, red flag.
Yeah, big red flag. And I'm assuming that this conversation came to light after the fact.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Sounds about right. Mm-hmm. Sounds like you should wait and report something like that.
Yeah. Yeah. On May 20th, 2000, Hubert and Preston went to work around 8 a.m. They left work around 12:30 p.m. Hubert drove Mr. Adams back to the Budget Inn where he was living at the time. Around 6 p.m., Hubert went to the local Maxi Muffler.
Oh, not the Maxi Muffler.
In Cleveland.
I know exactly where that is.
I know.
I can picture it in my head.
That's the best part about doing these podcasts, because, like, a movie's going on in my brain right now.
Yes.
He was visiting a friend named Clinton Daniel Mason, a mechanic there. He asked him if he could borrow a .22. Hubert had purchased the weapon from Mr. Mason the year previous, but of course he couldn't keep the rifle at his house, so he stashed it at Clinton Mason's mom's house.
Why couldn't he keep it at his house?
I don't know. It's crazy.
Oh, I know why.
Oh.
I bet he was a felon.
I bet he was. So he and Clinton go to his mom's house, and they get the gun. And when leaving, Mr. Mason asked what he was doing, and he said, quote, taking care of some business in Scott County. Scott County just so happens to be in Huntsville, Tennessee.
Mm-hmm. This guy.
Mm-hmm.
On Saturday, May 20th of 2000, Detective Alvarez received a call at his home. You know it's serious when you're, like, off duty and you're at home and you get a call not just from, like, fellow officers, but, like, from the 911 center.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know he's got to get that phone, like, see the caller ID and be like,
oh, shit.
Fuck. Like, not today? Yeah. Oh, Lord. But TBI wanted to speak with him because there had been a double homicide in Scott County. On Wednesday, May 24th, Detective Alvarez received a page from 911 that Sherry Sexton was attempting to get in contact with him. He contacted Sherry Sexton and had the conversation recorded. Sherry sounded desperate. She agreed to meet Detective Alvarez at the South Precinct. Detective Alvarez contacted Special Agent Barry Brakebill. What a name.
Mm.
Barry Brakebill.
That's a long one.
It's kind of, sounds like a Cars, like a, from the Cars movie.
Yeah.
Like it sounds like.
You know, there's a Natalie car.
Yes.
So cute.
Dude, Bentley, literally he's 15 years old. We just went to Canada. All he watched was Cars. It's like his one of his favorite movies.
So good. Such a great movie.
So
the
good.
The music.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so. Special Agent Barry Brakebill, he advised Detective Alvarez, or no, Detective Alvarez contacted Agent Brakebill and advised him of the scheduled meeting with Sherry Sexton at 11 o'clock. Alvarez and Special Agent Brakebill met Sherry 30 minutes into their discussions. Alvarez and Brakebill were advised that Hubert and his daughter were at the door, and he was upset, agitated, and wanted to speak to his wife. He then informed Detective Alvarez that Sherry was upset and that she did not know what she was saying. Alvarez escorted Hubert to the side of the building while Special Agent Brakebill removed Sherry Sexton to another location. Sexton was transported to a safe harbor home to spend the night. Good on them. Good job.
Mm-hmm.
The following day, officers arrested Hubert Glenn Sexton for the murders of Stanley Goodman and Terry Sue Goodman.
Mm-hmm. Only took them 5 days to have someone arrested.
Only took 5 days.
Yeah.
Them transferring her to a safe harbor home, though, is really good work. I also, like, it brings up... Oh, it was just in my head. The couple, the guy's name was Brian. The girl was missing just a few years ago, like COVID year or 2021.
Oh,
Brian something.
And
you know
who Gabby Petito?
Yes.
No, I think it's Brian Koberger is with the Indiana. That's a different one. But what was that guy's name? Laundry. Brian Laundry.
Yes.
And Gabby Petito.
Yes. And in the videos, the body cam footage, remember they were like, you just can't stay together. Like, we can take you here or to a shelter or drop you off at a hotel. Like, I can call and get it approved for us to get you a hotel or, like, pay for it or whatever. But, like, as soon as I read that, I was like, oh, that reminds me.
Yeah.
But I'm... Yeah.
Good on them.
Yes.
Good on them.
This was in the year 2000. I'm just glad, and even though it was unfortunate as well, the Gabby Petito thing, like, that even still in, like, 2020, officers are still willing and actually put effort into
making sure
people are safe and somewhere kind of protected or at least away from a bad situation.
Shout out to PD. It's so funny when you're friends with police officers, because I'm friends with a ton of them in my in Eastridge,
mm-hmm.
and I swear I like stare down the police because I think it's my friend.
Is that my friend? Mm-hmm. That's my friend.
Or what's even worse is when they get up behind me
mm-hmm.
and they flash their lights, and I'm like, but what then they'll turn them off and then pull up beside yeah. me and like chat for a minute. But yeah,
police officers. I would do that to everyone if I was a cop.
I was literally telling someone the other day, if I was a police officer, my favorite thing to do would be have my lights on driving fast. Like in the fast lane. Like just
for no reason.
Yes, for no reason. That would be that's what would get me fired.
Oh, traffic? Not anymore.
No.
Not for
me. You wouldn't have to deal with it.
Oh my gosh. That would be what's called an abuse of power.
That's why I couldn't be a cop. So, Detective Wade Chambers, he discovered 6 shell casings at the resident on his first day. He was unable to determine how many times the victims were shot, but that comes up a little bit later. He later returned to the residence and found more shell casings. Then, a forensic scientist with the TBI examined those shell casings. They weren't able to tie them to a specific gun, but they all came from the same gun.
Okay.
Now, I don't think they were able to compare them to the gun because I think he destroyed it.
Okay.
If I'm remembering correctly. Then Dr. Sandra Elkins at Knox County Medical Examiner's Office did the autopsy. They found that both autopsies were done on May 22nd, and it determined that they both had died from multiple gunshot wounds to the head and face region. Stanley Goodman had 4 and Terry Sue had less than that.
So, not to interrupt you, but the forensics, they weren't able to determine what type of gun, but they were able to determine that it was not a revolver.
Right.
Not that type of gun. It wasn't a revolver. Outside, there's still plenty of options. And just to backtrack a little bit, the gun that Hubert got from Mason's house
was a .22.
Was a rifle.
Yeah.
So, interesting. I wonder why they weren't able to determine what type of gun. Like, I wonder what goes into that and what.
It's the year 2000, so maybe technology has advanced since then, but.
Yeah. Or maybe multiple types of guns had similar patterns when being discharged.
Mm-hmm.
But it's just interesting how things evolve.
It is. So, yeah. Do I continue?
No. Yeah, I think the medical examiner.
Yeah, she just found that both of them had gunshot wounds to the head. And then based upon this proof, the jury returned verdicts finding that Hubert Sexton was guilty of first-degree murder of Stanley Goodman and the first-degree murder of Terry Sue Goodman.
So 2 separate charges. And Stanley was shot more?
More times.
Okay. So, Lynn Sexton, who is the wife of Hubert Stanley's first cousin, and also the first cousin of Sherry Sexton. So, Lynn and Sherry are cousins. And they married first cousins. Interesting. She testified that she had known Hubert for like 12 to 13 years. She explained that he and Sherry and their 3 children lived with her for about 6 months. They moved a lot. When we were doing like all the checking and stuff, the amount of addresses, there was a lot.
Mm-hmm.
But she stated that while his family lived in her home, she had no problems or difficulties with the family. They did eventually move from her home into a trailer park in Scott County. And then the family moved from there to Bradley County. So Scott County is where Huntsville, Tennessee is. Bradley County is where Cleveland, Tennessee is. Lynn described Hubert as a hard worker. She mentioned or stated that he was not an alcoholic or a drug user. She testified that she didn't believe that Hubert was the type of person to commit murder, describing him as a person who would come to someone's aid if needed and a person who would listen and give advice to someone with a problem. I know people that wouldn't commit murder, but they will also not give someone advice or really be the person you call if you need something.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like there's plenty of people like that, which is all good and well. But I also feel like there's plenty of people that would actually be very helpful to people.
It's always so shocking because it's the next door neighbor.
Exactly. That
lent you tools or what you borrowed sugar
yes.
from.
Yes.
It's always those people.
Yep.
They're chameleons, these people.
Yes. Yes, they are. Karen Cooper testified that she had known Hubert Sexton since he was like 3 or 4. He did not have a stable childhood environment. So growing up seems to be chaos for him. His parents weren't always present. They got a divorce when he was 6 years old. And at the age of 7, he was left with her sister-in-law and husband. Hubert Sexton was in more than 24 homes before he was 18 years old. One day, Hubert stepped off the bus coming home from school and realized that the family with whom he had been living had, like, up and moved.
Can you imagine being in more than 24 homes before the time you were... I was in two. Two homes. With
same.
The two parents
yes,
that
three,
I
three, but primarily two.
Yeah.
Even if you had 24 homes with your family, that's one thing, right?
Yeah.
Like, yeah, it sucks, and especially if you have to move schools and mm-hmm. whatever. But, like, to me, home is way more about the people you're around.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I could be halfway across the world with my family. I'm home. Like,
yeah.
That's just what home is, mm-hmm. you know? But at the same time, when you're in 24 homes...
That's like moving one...
With no regular...
way of life.
Anything. I mean, and then to literally go to school, ride the school bus home, and expect to, for the home for the time being that you've probably gotten used to or not because you're just used to moving, and everybody's gone. Like, screw you. Like, you don't exist. You know, like, what?
What that must do to a child's mental health.
What it would do to an adult.
Yeah.
Like,
but yeah, I feel like it'd be just devastating. What do you do? I wonder how he was found after that. You know? Did he go to a neighbor's house and then go right back into the system?
Or a family member? Or maybe he went to the house he came from before that one? But, like...
What do you even do as a child?
Oh,
so sad.
It is so sad.
Hubert had 2 older sisters and a younger brother. His father had been diagnosed with emphysema, and his mother had run off with another man. Miss Cooper related that Hubert had these siblings, but his father, because he had really poor health, he couldn't take care of him. That's why he was put into the system. When he first started school, he was of average intelligence, and he worked well with others. People liked him. Then, of course, Hubert began moving, and he was unable to stay in one place long enough to develop relationships with people,
mm-hmm.
friendships. Again, his parents were divorced at 6 and, you know, ran off with another man. The dad had some mental health issues. He spent at least 6 months in the Army Psychiatric Hospital, and then later developed heart disease and chronic lung disease and passed away. And so his parents were just, like, out of the picture, pretty
mm-hmm.
much. A child psychologist named Dr. Kenner said that one of the things that happens to people when they get hurt psychologically is they'll often repeat those
same things.
Yep.
Because that's all they know and it's all they can control.
Mm-hmm. He explained that this was most likely the person, you know, with an alcoholic parent. You know, they pledge they're never going to be an alcoholic, but then they end up marrying an alcoholic.
Or becoming an alcoholic. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Because that to them, that's love. Yeah. Especially parental things. Like, you can only imagine when you're in a toxic relationship and it's violently toxic emotionally and or physically. When you move on to the next relationship, you either pick the same type of person or you pick someone the complete opposite, and then you can actually show the toxic and violent tendencies mm-hmm. or behaviors because you know how to, you want to be on the other side to control, mm-hmm. right?
Been there, done that, toxic ex, on to bigger and better things.
Like, absolutely.
But if that's all you know.
Your parents mm-hmm. too, or like even in other homes, and it's not your parents, the adults that are supposed to care for you or be responsible for you, if that's all you know as caring and loving your whole life, like, and with over 24 homes, he had to have seen so many things multiple times mm-hmm. from multiple different adults or mm-hmm. siblings.
Yeah.
Or house siblings, I should say.
Yeah. Dr. Kenner testified that Hubert's younger brother actually suffered from mental, I don't want to say this word. It's the second to last sentence.
You don't want to say it?
Yeah.
No.
He had Down syndrome.
Yes.
His mother favored his brother, and that often, like, messed with him, too.
Wow. Yeah. So even when his family was still under the same roof, yep. he felt abandoned mm-hmm. by...
everyone.
Yeah, his entire life. I'm sorry. I have to text Kirby back.
Okay. Dr. Kenny related that a number of Hubert's relatives had a history of mental illness or substance abuse. He stated that impulse behavior and mental illness can run in families. And with all the issues that he had with different problems in his life, mm-hmm. it seems that's what happened. He also testified that studies that were done in 1940s revealed that human attachment and involvement was so critical to the well-being of babies and humans in general.
Yep.
So when it comes to, there was two different trials. One was in, like, right after it happened, almost 24 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And then there was a retrial recently.
Yeah, like, with the within same the outcome. Last couple years.
Mm-hmm, with the same outcome.
So they tried to, I guess his attorneys tried to get a new trial or get the sentencing and the charges, like, just thrown out completely. But in the latest trial, so I guess the appeal did go through enough for
there to be like it,
they have a retrial basically.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know off the top of your head what was the basis of the like, how were they able to
get enough evidence?
Interesting. Okay, just basically because it was, like, word of mouth and, like, what people said?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. The latest, well, the retrial, the jury they basically went to deliberate and, you know, discuss and come up with a decision at noon. The deliberations were stopped for a lunch break. And then at 2:29 p.m., the jury returned to open court with this verdict. Listen.
That is so fast.
You're screwed, buddy.
Yeah.
Whew. The jury found, as to each count of first-degree murder, that the proof established the aggravating circumstance that the murder was committed for the purpose of avoiding, interfering with, or preventing a lawful arrest or the prosecution of the defendant or another. The jury determined that the statutory aggravating circumstance outweighed any mitigating circumstances and therefore imposed sentences of death for the murders of Stanley Goodman and Terry Sue Goodman. So he is on death row.
I wonder what his death row meal would be.
That is so random. I kind of don't want to know. I don't like this guy, but I do feel
for him, right? Like, there's a reason people end up the way they do.
Yeah, I do believe sometimes people are born with, we'll call it not wired correctly. But I also do believe that majority of the people who become or practice these things and do things like this, it's like, in my opinion, majority of them have never been taken care of.
It's learned behavior.
Yeah. Or abandonment, or like, because sometimes you could actually like be loved at home, but everywhere else you go, because maybe you learn differently than somebody else, or maybe you look differently than somebody else, or whatever. It's like half of your time is spent dealing with hell, even if it's not from your parents, mm-hmm. or the adults that are supposed to be caring for you. But like, how did anybody expect this kid to grow up in the life that he did and be a kind, generous, soft, and safe human being? Yeah. Like, what?
Yeah.
How does that make sense? Oh. I don't like most people. Oh my God, why can't we take better care of our children?
Yeah.
Well, of anybody and everybody.
Yeah. Oh my gosh, it's not good.
Can't even imagine the hell that he went through. But only then to put other people through hell. It sucks.
I wonder if, because I've had this feeling before, I wonder if people who have experienced abuse, even if they've gone through mental health therapy or medication or whatever that they needed to, I wonder if they ever fear becoming their...
100%.
I feared that.
Yeah. Like, definitely. Or even say, like, especially as a child or anybody in their, like, adolescent years, I think you fear becoming someone who is abusive, physically, verbally, emotionally.
Sexually.
Yeah, I think also if you grow up with someone who deals with alcoholism or addiction, I think it's similar to, you have to think about it this way. So one thing being a single mom for a long time and then even, you know, having Taylor, one thing I've always tried so hard, I'm not saying I haven't screwed up a time or two, but really always making a point to never speak negatively or badly about my oldest dad in front of him or to him, mm-hmm. or around him, or even like carrying that sort of energy, because in turn I would be telling
him
Bentley that he is, half of him is terrible.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And that can really screw with duh. I mean, of course. So I think it's the same thing. Like any person, but especially children or someone in their adolescent years, worries or is fearful that they, because that's half of them.
That is a good parenting tip.
Yeah.
Is, I mean, it should be obvious. Don't talk negatively about your co-parent, but for real.
Yep. Even if you don't co-parent, even if the other parent ran off and you have not seen a dime from them, if they ask questions, answer them, but there is no reason to talk down or bad. Their kids don't care about that stuff.
Yeah.
They don't care. What you're telling them is half of you is a piece of shit like that person.
Yeah.
Don't do that. Don't freaking do it.
I love that. That's going to be a clip on TikTok for sure. People love it when you drop, like, just really good, what is it, opinions on things? Yeah. Or just, like...
I try not to be opinionated all the time. Like my opinion's right.
Uh-huh.
But I think when it comes to parenting, having to grow up being a parent in front of the world, I'm like, you know, I'm a damn good mom. But I still screw up. Like, we all will.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, sometimes it's a matter of, like, I learned this because I screwed up. Mm-hmm. You know? Like,
it's okay to screw up. Yeah. Mistakes are opportunities to grow.
Yes.
And learn. Mistakes are opportunities to grow.
Yeah, because then you're less likely to repeat it.
Mm-hmm.
I don't do everything the right way. I try to, but that's impossible. It's just, I appreciate hearing people give little, like, oh, I went through this. I'm like, holy shit, I never thought about that. Like, that's so good. Mm-hmm. So, it's not, everything's not for everybody, but it's nice to either relate or get some advice you weren't expecting to get, see something a different way.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah. Don't talk shit about the other parent.
Retweet.
All
right. Thanks for listening. Follow us on social media at Expired Podcast, at Expired Podcast 423, at Expired Podcast Chat. New episodes every Monday. Beautiful lighting today.
Yes. Courtesy of MTV. Out. Thank you.
We're so borrowing nice. Some lights. So
we look so pretty.
This is such a good one. So If you're listening, go watch on YouTube. New episodes every Monday out at 6 p.m.
Make sure you follow us, like us, leave us a review. Tell us what we do great, what we do terrible.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're going to be an asshole, be a funny one.
Don't do meth.
And please take care of each other.
This is the Expired Podcast.
Bye.